Hi, and welcome to Governance Bites. I'm Mark Benicevich, and today it's my pleasure to host Tony Arthur.
Thank you, Mark.
Tony's an experienced manager from banking, insurance, and has a lot of experience reporting to boards as well as some governance experience as well. So a really valuable conversation, I'm sure. Thank you very much for your time. The first question I have for you is, in your experience reporting to boards, how frequently should board meetings be?
So I think in my experience, it depends. I've worked for some very large banks where the cadence and rhythm is as you would expect for an organisation of that complexity, managing that level of risk in business, and so very much monthly. So board meetings will take place monthly. There'll be an annual strategy session, which is separate to the board meetings, but is likely to last up to sort of 3 to 5 days, working with the management team to, you know, establish effectively a strategic plan for the year ahead, and obviously budgets and, you know, risk appetite settings and everything else hinge off that. Smaller organisations that I've worked with, sometimes it can be, you know, a little bit less onerous, just simply because of, again, the size structure, whether it's a regulated or non-regulated market. But I wouldn't expect, and it's certainly not been my experience, that it's ever sort of more than, you know, 6 weeks. Normally what you'll see is monthly. But as I say, sometimes when a business is in a mature state, its processes are going well, you know, the events and the business and how it's being managed, you can push it out a little bit. Monthly is probably the regular.
Right, so they can be slightly less frequently. So between monthly and 6 weekly.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the strategy session there. During those 3 to 5 days, is that when they'd also work through their risk matrix, risk situations and so forth?
Yep. Again, in my experience, and I think, you know, probably around best practice, normally what you see set by board is a bit of a review, a hindsight look at the, you know, the previous period of time and see how both the board and management, you know, have achieved against their goals. And, you know, when you think about the risks that the organisation has faced into over that period of time, are they still a risk to the business, or have new risks come into the business that, you know, need to be thought about? And then you look forward. And so at that time, you're looking, first of all, to set up what are the big rocks, you know, or elephants that, you know, need to be faced into from an organisational setting. And then once you have that clear picture set up, you then go, well, what are the risks that you know, have the ability to be able to impact the plan that we have and the goals that we have? And then from there, you're able to set up your risk appetite settings. So as a business, where are we comfortable there being more risks that we're exposed to? And where are those areas where we have deep concern that if those risks were to play out, they could deeply impact our business, and that's where they'd want to play tight.
Right, right, and offer serious mitigation strategies. So with that cadence of reporting of board meetings around every month or 6 weeks, what kind of reporting do the board expect? How frequently do they expect it, and how far in advance of those board meetings?
Yeah, look, absolutely. So again, in all of the businesses that I've worked in the roles, the KPIs or, you know, the reporting is an absolutely integral part of being able to ensure that directors have the right information given to them on the right basis. And so you sort of step back from what does that really mean. Directors need to do a couple of things. One is, yes, they need to help set the strategic plan. Two, they need to be able to help select, support and hold to account through oversight the executive and senior managers of an organisation. So as a senior organisation, you know, senior manager in an organisation, normally I have been focused in around the customer or distribution of a business. And so therefore the reporting that I have, you know, put together myself and with the people that work for me, it has been tasked on those key KPIs or key performance indicators that illustrate the real health and the real risks that are impacting the business. One of the hardest things for a board to be able to do is to get the level of clarity and honesty and insight as to really what performance looks like. So how are we not just going against the goals that were set out in our strategic plan for whatever business unit or organisational unit that you're responsible for, okay? But what are the risks that are impacting those, both positive and negative? Because you can perform very well, you know, as a business against the goals that you set previously 6, 8, 4 months ago, but there may be reasons for that high performance, effectively a tailwind, if you will, or there might be other times where you're not achieving the goals that you've set out, but risks have emerged or played out which have inhibited that. So being able to make sure that you're pulling that information together, I would always look to try and get board reports to our board secretariat no more than 14 days and no later than 14 days before a board meeting. That allows time for the board secretariat to be able to pull and coalesce all the various board reports, CEO report, you know, financial reports, etc., etc., together. And then you'd be wanting to get them to directors around about 7 to 10 days before a board meeting. Again, in my view, the people that hold the greatest liability and responsibility in an organisation are the board. And therefore, paying them the respect to be able to get those papers out and the information out so that they can both interpret and understand and have the ability to be able to form questions so that when the time is invested as a come together as a board, that time can be used as effectively as possible.
Right, thank you. You mentioned, or from what you've said there, it sounds like the board reports that you're providing would have a mix of structured information with regular KPIs in a similar format to what you're doing at each board meeting, and then some unstructured commentary and things, particularly around the risks that may have happened and so forth.
So 100%. So the way that I've always preferred to be able to do it is effectively a performance dashboard, so that directors, if they are moving quickly through, they can eyeball a range of different KPIs. And you'd want to work as an executive team across what the overall KPIs are, because you know what's important to me in my area is going to be different than other executives in different positions.
Yes.
But you want to make sure it tells the whole and the right story, so that when directors are seeing various reports from various executives, they all align. They all help tell their part of the story. They aren't separated and disconnected and, quite frankly, cause confusion or uncertainty.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And then you'll have some commentary around that to explain what's going on.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's one thing having a dashboard, then you want to be able to help interpret what that information means.
Yes.
And in some ways, you know, the numbers and the reporting, the data itself is fairly straightforward. Often it's the interpretation and the story that goes around that that's really important.
Yes.
And certainly as I've got, older in my executive career and in more and more roles with greater responsibility, I think you start to understand actually transparency and being able to provide the greatest level of view for a director through. And remember, quite often they are removed completely from effectively the front line of where interactions are going on with customers or for members, you know, if it's a non-for-profit, being able to provide them real clarity as to what's going on, what are the tailwinds, what are the headwinds, and why are they occurring, and, you know, what is, you know, small noises that you hear maybe from the marketplace that are or may impact the business, you know, at a future date, being able to bring that together in that sort of commentary piece to accompany the dashboard is really, really important.
Right, because the board absolutely, as you said before, relies on information from you and they have significant liability. So giving them a completely balanced view of what's going on, telling them the truth about what's happening and not obfuscating anything will be very important.
100%.
Right, thank you. Do the board often come back with questions to you from that board report, and what sort of questions would come back, if I can ask, you know, broadly enough?
No, absolutely. Occasionally, in my experience, you'll get questions arise before board meetings. So a director will receive a paper, or the board receives papers 7 to 10 days out from a board meeting. They'll be obviously digesting that meeting. There may be questions, and it doesn't happen overly frequently, but there may be interpretation questions where they go, I don't understand this or I don't understand that, and they will want to ask those questions before they get to board, because it's helping them build their question set for the entire board meeting. Remember, there are, I guess, you know, multiple parts effectively of a board meeting and process. One of the standard papers, the sitting papers, and then there are at times special agenda items that will be focused on by a board. And so there may be things that the board are focused on that sit outside the normal operational running of the business. So yes, you will get questions that arise pre-board meetings, but most often, you know, when your paper is effectively presented to the board, you know, the chair will, if it's a standard, you know, a standard board paper, a sitting board paper that's there on every agenda, you know, there will any questions arising, and then you'll face questions, obviously, from the directors during that more formal session.
Right, right. Because as you said, you've got standing board papers, your finance reports and your distribution reports and sales reports, that kind of thing. And then often your specialist reports will relate to your work plan, your project work and so forth.
Correct.
About delivering the strategy. Yeah, thank you. Now, I know you're an avid sports person. You know, you're involved heavily in sports and not just in the field, of course, also in the administration side. So is there a difference, do you think, in governance, what governance is for the not-for-profit sector versus the for-profit sector? Does the nature of governance change?
I think at a very high level, there really shouldn't be any reasons for there to be, I guess, when you think about best practice and process, there really shouldn't be any differences between governing and running governance across a for-profit organisation or a non-for-profit. Now, in reality, my experience would tell me that historically there has been. That gap is getting smaller and smaller. Now, obviously, you know, for-profit organisations are focused on representing shareholders and ultimately for making profit on a sustainable basis. Non-for-profits, obviously, are not there to, you know, serve as a profit-making, you know, entity. They're there to serve members or a community that they represent. In reality, though, I think governance across both those areas continues to change. But to your original question, I think it is my view and my experience that in the non-for-profit space, there has, across a lot of what I've seen in a New Zealand setting, in a sports setting, there has been a lot of maturing and a need for governance practice and process to mature a lot, because often you have people who are volunteering into positions, you know, that are, you know, either forming part of the management processes or part of the governance processes. But some of the challenge, some of the inspection by the communities that we represent have become greater and greater and greater, and therefore some of the liability that we face and some of the need to ensure that the organisation, the member, the communities that we represent, you know, are getting what they should deserve and expect out of the people that are in charge of managing that plan, managing that strategic view, and then managing the risks that go around, you know, that plan or strategic plan being executed.
Right, yes, and that's been an evolution over the last kind of 30 years, isn't it, really? And Sport New Zealand's been heavily involved in that, of bringing corporate governance discipline to a not-for-profit sector.
I definitely think there is balance, and I definitely think I've seen examples, to be blunt, in both the private sector, you know, and more in the public sector, where, you know, proportionality of governance processes and governance expectations have been outweighed to, you know, the organisational size and capability. Right, you can take a little organisation and crush it with too much process. You can crush it with too much government requirement, and all you end up is a situation where people are attempting to report and attempting to comply, you know, with, you know, the governance and expectations that are there. However, when I think about, you know, the sport that you're involved with, you're talking about a global organisation, you know, many, many countries around the world, you know, many, many stakeholders to be able to, you know, coordinate with, you know, coordinate activities with, to support, you know, the growth of the sport. You know, I would expect there to be, you know, proportionate to that, the right level of governance structure and processes to make sure that the executive committee or the working committee, you know, is able to achieve its goals well, but also that the vision, the strategic plan, you know, the risk mitigation processes, the reporting, you know, the understanding of what the reporting is that you should have on a global basis for a non-for-profit like the one that you're involved with, you know, that should be of a requisite level. There should be proportionality, which is, you know, there is quite some, you know, coordination structure risk associated with it. Therefore, you know, I would expect to see that in there.
Right. So it's about right-sizing it for the organisation. Once an organisation gets to a certain size, it should have a very robust governance framework in place.
Correct. And again, my experience is that sometimes there's some, you know, some real mahi, some real work involved with the putting together of the processes, the putting together of the reports, embedding the processes. But once that is done, it is a lot more lightweight to manage.
Yes.
So heavy lifting up front means lightweight management down the track.
Yes.
And if you can get that piece right, then it's extremely good.
Yes.
If you don't pay attention to that first bit, then often it feels like monthly or six-weekly heavy lifting, not just for, you know, the management, but also for the board, where I've seen, you know, organisations at their best, they have that work done up front so that the conversation when the board comes together can focus on what the real issues and opportunities are, not having to grind their way through mismatches in information and therefore perspectives and or, you know, questions around, you know, certain aspects of the organisation.
Right, absolutely. Actually, following on from that point, in your experience, is there any significant difference between governance that, as we express it in New Zealand, and governance overseas, or is it essentially governance is governance?
Again, go to a very high level. I think governance is governance. I think absolutely, depending on the organisation, there can be, you know, obviously, you know, country laws, there can be country regulations. There can also be cultural expectations, attitudes, behaviours, you know, in different countries which are different. However, I think at a high level, absolutely, good governance is good governance. Looks the same as whether you're in New Zealand, it looks the same whether you're in Zambia, looks the same whether you're in Zurich or anywhere else.
Right.
It's the same.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. Well, one final question for you then, and you've kind of alluded to this, but I thought I might ask you just to wrap it all up in a little bundle. What exactly is governance? What is the role of the board of directors? How would you summarise that briefly?
I think in its very simplest aspects, the board is there to help set the strategic plan. The chair and the board's responsibility is to make sure that they have the right people, the right bums on the right seats. Right, so they have the people who have the ability to be able to execute on the strategic plan, and then their job is both accountability, holding accountability, mm-hmm. and being responsible for the execution of that plan. And there is a lot that comes around that. But ultimately I think it's those three things, the strategic plan, the people, and then the holding to account and making sure that the organisation has the resources to be able to furnish the information to the board so that it begins to move, progress, and is sustainable in the direction that the board sets.
Right, and with that kind of structure in place, as you said, and I think a really key point that you made was doing the work up front to get all that governance framework and that compliance framework in place. Once you've got that, the work itself on a day-to-day basis becomes so much easier and the organisation's far more likely to succeed with all of that in place.
100%, and it's, again, it's one of those things. You know, we seem to find ourselves at a point, you know, where we are all time poor. And, you know, people who, you know, are, you know, running organisations, whether they be profit-orientated or non-for-profit, whether they're governing and profit-orientated or non-for-profit, we are all time poor. And so communication is absolutely critical. Communication from the chair across a board and in between a board, in between the various board members, both at a board meeting, as importantly outside of the board meeting, and between effectively the executive management and stakeholders and the board. So I think that is a really, really, really key part of the glue where you see differences between organisations that are thriving and those that are surviving.
Right. Yes, absolutely. That's another great point to pick up. Well, thank you very much for your time, TA. That's been fantastic. I look forward to speaking to you again soon. Nice to catch up.
Thank you for having me.
See you next episode.